Dichpin Yetzei V'Yechol, all who are hungry should come and eat. And called Dichrach Yetzei V'Yipsa, on the surface it's just a repetition of the same thing. Whoever wants needs to celebrate Pesach should come and celebrate it. Now, what is it doing here? It's is a problem. And what is the connection with the first statement? Now, in some of the Meforshim, it's mentioned, well, it's an act of chesed. To offer people food is an act of chesed, an act of tzedakah. And since there is a pasuk that says like this, Sion b'mishpoti podeh, that the pidyon, the redemption of the Jewish people, comes with mishpat, with justice, the shoveo b'tzedakah, which means that you need tzedakah for the final tshuva, for the final return. So therefore, since Pesach is the holiday of the redemption, so we do an act of chesed, we invite. That's of course only a partial answer. Why should we say it right after Holach Moanio? In Ishayo, see on the Mishpat Yipodeh, Ishayo, I can't remember exactly the wording, but in Ishayo, but so it says like this. Now, first of all, Kol Dichvin Yetzei V'Yechol, Kol Dichvin Yetzei V'Yipsach, why the repetition, if the idea is the same? So it's mentioned in some Meforshim, I remember clearly some Sofer, and I saw it in others too. Why does it say, by Yipsach Kol Dichrich? Right? When it comes to celebrating Passover, we say the ones who need. And when it comes to eating, we say the ones who are hungry. Kol Dichvin Yetzei V'Yechol, Kol Dichrich Yetzei V'Yitzah. So he says very well. It couldn't say Kol Dichvin Yetzei V'Yitzah. Anybody who is hungry should come and celebrate Pesach, because Pesach is a reference to what? To the Korban Pesach. And the Korban Pesach is never eaten when you're hungry. It's eaten a la Soiveya. So most you can say whoever needs it to. You can say the one who is hungry. But Ochel Yechol refers to the Matzeh specifically. Of course it refers to everything else, but specifically the Matzeh. So we say Kol Dichvin. Kol Dichvin Yetzei V'Yechol, come and eat. Kol Dichvin Yetzei V'Yipsach, and whoever needs to do the Korban Pesach, if so he can be hungry. That's why it says Dichrich. There are other commentaries that say like this. Only the Minuyo. You're right. It's only the Minuyo, so you couldn't possibly announce right before the meal, come and eat. Right. Yeah?
When
it says called whoever is in need,
does it here mean that whoever needs to perform the Pesach ceremony?
That's what we could understand it as.
Exclude a goy?
Of course, a goy is not allowed to do the Korban Pesach, yeah.
Would this be a riot for it?
How would that be a riot?
Because
a
goy doesn't have to do the
so there, yeah.
He's not invited.
So what's a riot? What that the state can only
partake in a court. Well,
the truth of the matter is, it says kol orei lo yoichal boy. It's in the Torah. In the Torah, it says that he can't eat or call pesach. Kol orei is a Gentile lo yoichal boy. The uncircumcised can't eat it. In a Gentile, even if he's circumcised, he's halachically uncircumcised. Now, but again, we are missing the connection between Holach Moanio in Kol Dichvin Yetzei V'Yechol. Now, the connection is the following. Many point out that the only part of the Haggadah, or almost the only part of the Haggadah that's written in Aramaic, is the Holach Moanio. And of course it requires an explanation why it is. Why is it written in Aramaic? It makes sense that this was added at the time that Aramaic became the main language of the Jews, and Hebrew was pretty much forgotten. Right? Otherwise, they would have written it in Hebrew like everything else. When was that period when Hebrew was pretty much forgotten? Right? That was after the exile, during the exile. So it makes sense that during the exile, people started to say to themselves, you know what, it's silly for us to commemorate Pesach. Because the whole idea of commemorating Pesach is freedom, but we are again not free. We are again in Egypt, so why do we have to commemorate the exodus from Egypt? Okay? This must have been a common statement that people used to make. Why commemorate Passover? We are again slaves. We are again under Nebuchadnezzar. So the rabbis added to the text of the Haggadah, in the beginning of the Haggadah, a statement that refutes that claim. How? By saying like this. And this is how the Maharal puts it. Remember the statement. Ho lachmo anyo de'acholu avosono be'aro de Mitzrayim. Even without the Maharal, of course, you can say the same thing, but of course the Maharal is much deeper. Ho lachmo anyo de'acholu avosono be'aro de Mitzrayim really means this represents the fact that we are free, which means like this. That freedom that we gained in Egypt, we never ever will lose. It becomes part of our character. We remain free forever. We, as Jews, by character, we can't be slaves anymore. Somebody can enslave us. It's a different story. But we will remain free people forever and ever and ever, because the moment we accepted the Torah, we became only servants of God and no one else. Somebody can force us to do certain things, but that doesn't make us into slaves.
So we have a pasuk that tells us this very point also. There is a pasuk in the Parsha of the Eagle, it talks about after the eagle, the head of the eagle, which says they're going to be spread out, and you got to worry that you have to, when you are spread out, you have to keep to the mitzvahs, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it mentions that you have to keep the mitzvah of eating matzah, and you have to keep paper.
Yeah.
So
it's not obvious, but there's some portion connected.
Yeah, they're connected, but I mean,
right.
It's not...
Right. Some portion connected, right? That the idea is that you, even when you are in Golus, right, that basic freedom that you gain, you never lose. Which means that freedom of Mitzrayim we keep forever. In other words, our character of free people we gained in Egypt. It was given over genetically from one generation to the next. Our character changed. We became free. So our becoming a slave again to Nebuchadnezzar is only temporary. It's only circumstantial. Our essence didn't change. How do we know it? Because that's what this matzah symbolizes. Freedom. The absolute freedom of the Jews. And that freedom has remained forever. So now, let's put it together. This is the symbol of freedom. Right? Therefore, your claim that we don't have to commemorate Pesach now that we are in exile is wrong. Because we are still free. Therefore, kol dichvin yeseh v'yechol, whoever needs, in other words, whoever is hungry, come and eat matzah, because there is a good reason to eat matzah. Kol Ditzrich Yetzev Yitzach, come and commemorate Pesach, right? So, some of the commentaries say, but therefore, it can't possibly mean the Korban Pesach, right? So what is the Yitzach? What? So it says like this. Kol Dichvin represents physical needs. Physical needs. You are hungry for physical things. Right? Dietrich is sorry. You know, it's something that you must do. Now it's your spiritual obligation. So it means like this. Kol Dichvin, anybody who is in physical need, commemorate the Korban Pesach. They're supposed to give you a feeling of physical freedom. Kol Dichvin, whoever is in need of a spiritual uplift, Yeseh v'yifsach, Pesach is supposed to give it to him. And listen to this, listen how it connects. Because, redemption has two levels. There is a physical level to redemption, and there is a spiritual level to redemption. The physical level of redemption, right, we gained in Egypt. The spiritual redemption we also gained in Egypt. So therefore we have to commemorate it in two levels. And eventually, how will it come out, that redemption? The physical redemption of the Jews will be when all the Jews will be in Israel. That's the physical redemption, right? That doesn't guarantee spiritual redemption. But that will lead eventually to absolute freedom, which includes being free to serve God, which is the spiritual redemption. This is how it connects to the next piece. Hoshato hocho. You are right. This year we are here. Yeah. But that's not a good claim, because since we eat the matzah, we have a guarantee. The matzah reminds us of the guarantee that what? Let the Shonu Habor, the Aron Israel, our physical redemption will come. And that physical redemption will bring us into Israel. Of course, that doesn't guarantee spiritual redemption. Because, as the Gemara says, there are two Mashiach. There is a Mashiach ben Yosef that represents a physical redemption. This is Leshonu Habor, the Aron Israel. And there is a Moshiach ben David. But Moshiach ben David will also come. Hoashato Avde. This year we are spiritually slaves, right? But it's only a temporary situation. The Shonu Habor ben Chorin. So we have a good reason to commemorate, because the commemoration is the guarantee that it's only temporary this day. Isn't that a good reason to commemorate? In other words, the whole idea of the whole Lachmo Anyo is to refute the claim that today there is no reason to keep Pesach because we are again in exile. Okay? This was the idea for the whole Lachmo Anyo. Now, the Magid itself, the whole Lachmo Anyo itself, is not part of the Arba Koisos. The Manishtano is, right? According to the Nesoiro, you don't fill the cup by the whole Lachmo Anyo, but by the Manishtano. And that's important. Why? Because the whole Lachmo Anyo is only, as I told you, an announcement, but it's not part of the essential Seder. The essential Seder starts with a question and answer, right? So this is why you have to fill the cup by the Manishtano. There are some who fill the cup by the Avodi Moinu, but the majority, maybe you take a look in your Agod, is what it says, but the majority fill the cup before the Manishtano, and that's the correct way, because the question is essential to the whole Agod. First of all, Manishtano alayla zemikola leiloi, so there are four questions. We have the question of Chometz Umatzeh. We have the question of Moror. We have the question of Matbilin. And we have the question of Mesubin. In the Mishneh, the original three questions were Pesach, Matzah, Moror. Right? Pesach, Matzah, Moror. And the fourth one was Matbilin. Okay? This of course makes sense. Except that eventually Pesach was taken out because it wasn't relevant anymore. We don't do the Korban Pesach anymore. Right? So we had to find something else to substitute it. Why Mesubin? What does Mesubin have to do with the Korban Pesach? Now, what does Moror represent, obviously? The state before the freedom. Okay? The state before the freedom. What does matzah represent? The going out. What does Pesach represent? Pesach represents what God did for us. Right? Moror is our state before the freedom. Matzah, our state after the freedom. And what's above everything is the Korban Pesach. Now, that God transferred us from Moror to Matzah, right? That the general state of affairs is controlled by Hashem. Al Sheposach Al Botei Bnei Israel. Okay, so comes out according to this that the change was made by Hashem. In other words, the state between Avdus and Chirut was made by Hashem. This is what the Korban Pesach represents. So we changed it, and we said like this: we can't have Pesach because we don't do it anymore. So we'll do something else, right, which will show a state of freedom, right? A state of freedom. Now, at that time, people who were, you know, who felt free in society, really free, not the servants, the high society used to eat when they were leaning, right? So at that time, it was felt that that is a good substitute for Korban Pesach. You know that there is a shita, for instance, the shita Sarabiyot, the famous shita Sarabiyot, that says that today we have no obligation to eat matzah in the Arba Koshes leaning, even though we don't paskin like that, right? But it's good enough that if you already finished the Arba Koshes and you forgot to lean, you don't have to drink them all over again. Because the Deyeved, we rely on the Shita Sarabiyot, that the Shita Sarabiyot is, and his Shita Sarabiyot is that, remember, that was something that was established at the time, because it had a meaning at the time. At the time when the meaning of Mesubin, right? When people used to eat the Mesubin, was because in those days, at that time, that's how important people used to eat. What about when the custom changes? So of course you don't have a chiyuv to eat the Mesubin anymore. That's the Shita Sarabiyot. We don't pass it that way. Why don't we pass it that way? Because anything, once it's established, even though it lost the meaning, right, the law is still the law. So this is, are those that argue on the Rabiyot. But with the Yevet, we do rely on the Rabiyot. Okay? So in any case, at that time, that was a sign of freedom. Yeah?
With the Rabiyot, how do we have to change for today's society, how the important people eat today?
For sure, the Rabbi would say that. For sure. Meaning the Rabbi says clearly, today we eat sitting, you know, sitting straight, so we should eat sitting straight. I don't know what would be today the...
Servants and things. And,
the what?
You hire servants to bring you each course. And...
Okay, there is. I mean, even in that, there, you know, there is
that'd
such a thing like...
That would be halachically suitable to be a to substitute for the... The Korban, you're saying, is a leaning substitute for today, like with servant substitute?
If that would become, if that would be a sign of freedom, yeah, there is such a, there is a reminder of that. It says in certain, I don't know if you ever saw in Minhogei Pesach, that don't pour your own wine, let the other person do it, and you do it for the other person.
It's Mark
Lavazov,
he says,
oh, exactly. Why? Because this is more fitting to how really important people do things, so there is such a sort. Yeah.
Is I understanding correctly? You said we had Moron representing enslavement, Matzah representing freedom, and Pesach representing divine guidance.
The divine intervention.
And so then you said that we lost Pesach and we brought back Mesubin.
Right.
And Mesubin represents their Cherub. So I would think, in order to maintain the parallel, that he would have. We would have brought on something additional that represented divine guidance rather than terror.
You know, why didn't they choose something else? You know, what bothers you is still Mesubin is not.
It doesn't represent.
It doesn't Korban Pesach. How is it? What is the connection between Mesubin, right, and the Korban Pesach? That's what you're asking.
Well, a little bit different. What I was saying is why was that something chosen that represented divine guidance in the same way that Pesach represented divine guidance. We still have something Matzah, which remains from the original three, which represents Pesach.
Okay. In other words, what you are asking is that you don't hear the parallel, right? The parallel is not clear. In other words, they took out one and they put another one, which is really a repetition of Matzah. That's what you're asking. Okay. It says like this. The Maral mentions that we find throughout the night of Pesach the repetition of the number four. Number four, right? Four koisos, four questions, right? On the other hand, we also have three, Pesach Matzumoroy. Okay? So says the Mara, right in his Haggadah, he says, well, he says, because four are the Imovites. What's the idea? Because that's the morale holds like this: the idea that the Imoids are four and the Ovoids are three. What is really the point in it? That the Ovoids are three and the Imoids are four. So we mentioned in the past that the morale, the idea of Yisoid, anything that you have to build on, is always the number three. When you build on something, you need three. When you want to establish a Hazoket, you need three times, right? It's like if you want to build, you can't have two points to rely on, to lean on. You need three, right? So therefore, you need three in order to establish something. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, that's what established Klal Yisrael. You need three of us. That we find very often in Chazal, the idea of everything which is three times, it becomes established. Before three times, it doesn't become established. What is the number four? The number four represents one above three. What does it mean, one above three? That what about if you start shaking a table of three, right? It lacks stability. It's not. You can easily move it, which means if nothing bothers it, it will remain like that. But what about if there is something, there is a tremendous wind that will come and push it? So then you need the fourth one to establish it, to make it stronger, right? It says like this. Avraham Avinu had a certain idea that in an ideal world, it would have worked. His idea was, for instance, that Ishmael should stay home. That was his idea. That Hogar should stay home and Ishmael should stay home. Yes? And in an ideal world, he should stay home. Why not? Shouldn't he learn from Yitzchak or from Avraham Avinu what to do? Came Sarah and said what? Let him leave. Let her leave. No, there is no room. Right? Why did she do it? Of course, Hashem told her to. Right? But why is it that Avraham Avinu didn't receive the message and Sarah yes? Because Avraham Avinu represents the world as it should be, and Sarah represents the world as it actually is. Which means the world as it should be, Ishmael should become a Talmid of Yitzchak and a Talmid of Avraham Avinu. He should always be there, and he should be there to serve them. Of course he should be home. But in this real world, it just won't work. So therefore, Sora is to add the fourth leg to the three-legged table. Okay? The same thing Yitzchak. Yitzchak felt that Esau and Yaakov make a perfect partnership. Perfect partnership. Esau is extremely skillful in physical things. Extremely skillful. Yaakov is fabulous in spiritual things. Ishtom Yeshev Olim. Together, they'll make a perfect unit, right? Everything that means, that requires physical work, Esav will do, including bringing korbanos. You know, the Chazal say that according to the original plan, Esav is the physical Kohen. It's incredible. Kehuna would be divided between Yaakov and Esav. Esav would have physical kehuna, he will bring the korbanos, and Yaakov will do the spiritual kehuna. You hear? Ideally, be perfect. Why not in an ideal world? Came Rivka, and she is the one that represents the real world. In this real world of ours, this just won't work. Right. So therefore, she comes and she adds the fourth leg to the table in order to make it more stable. In order to make it more stable, you have to adjust to the reality. Again, the number four. Okay. Yaakov Avinu wanted to marry Rochel, right? Came Rochel and decided, for whatever it is, no, he has to marry Leah, not me, first. So, changes the situation, and it happens the way she does it. Again, what do we find? we find that the ovoids represent an ideal, because ideally, we once even spoke about it, I don't want to go into the whole thing, Yaakov was supposed to marry only Rachel. In the ideal situation, in the perfect situation, the zivug of Yaakov is only Rachel, no one else. Leah doesn't even belong to Yaakov originally. Right? But in the real world, he needs Leah. Again, between the ideal and the real, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov represents the ideal, but the real needs a fourth leg. This is why the arba, the four, represents the strengthening of the three. Right? The arba imohoi are added to the ovoi because they strengthen the ovoi. They bring down the greatness of the ovoi to this imperfect world of ours. Okay. Now. The Pesach Matzah Moror, according to the Maharal, are keneged Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. According to the Maharal, let's start with Pesach. Pesach is avoido, right? As a matter of fact, this is what the Torah calls it. V'avadetos avoido hazoiz b'chodesh hazeh. What is the avoido? They avoid the korban. Avoido is the korban. Okay. Now, who represents avoido between Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov? Avoid is Yitzchak. The korban Pesach is represented by Yitzchak. Now, we have different interpretations according to different meforshim, the connection between Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov and Pesach Matzah Moror. But according to the Maharal, Moror is Yaakov. Why? Because Yaakov had to go through, right? And Yaakov himself, when Paro asks him, he says, "My life has been more difficult than my forefather's life, because he had to go to Golis, he had to go to Lobon, he had to go to Mitzrayim." Right? He represents what? He lost Yosef, right? He had a problem. I mean, Yaakov is the Jew who has problems. Moror, okay. And Avraham represents the matzah. Why? Because he is the first one who actually was redeemed. Mitchilo ovdei avodei zora hoyo avoteinu me'avdus lecheirus. Right? The mitchilo ovdei avodei zora, as we are going to see, according to many mitzvotim, refers to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was born an idol worshipper, and all of a sudden he goes from one extreme to the other. Right? That's the matzah. So matzah represents, according to Maral, Avraham Avinu. The Pesach represents Yitzchak, and Mor represents Yaakov. Now, the Matbilim, what is the Matbilim? The Matbilim doesn't represent any one particular one of the Imohos. That is the thing that changes everything, right, and brings it down to this physical world. In other words, the way we spoke, the way we said yesterday, that the matbilin is the idea that it makes everything meaningful. I mean, without the matbilin, without becoming hungry, remember we said it in the Gemara, the matbilin was a method to arouse your hunger, right? Without the arousing of your hunger, you wouldn't appreciate anything. You wouldn't be able to eat not Pesach, not Matzah, and not Moror. That's what makes you capable of eating everything, right? Symbolically. Therefore, this is the symbolism of the matbilin, is the imohoi, the thing that changes the three into the number four. In other words, what changes the three into four is the matbilin. So therefore, the matbilin is the symbolism of the imohoi. Now, in the answer to the questions, we say like this. Avodim Moinu Lefaroi Bemitzrayim. The Avodim Moinu Lefaroi Bemitzrayim, of course, is an answer to which one of the questions? What reminds us of Avodim Moinu? Moror. So, Avodim Moinu Lefaroi Bemitzrayim is an answer to Moror. Vayotzienu Hashem Elokeinu Mishom Biyot Chazoko Vizroya Netuyo. He took us out. Right? Vayotzienu Hashem Elokeinu Mishom Biyot Chazoko Vizroya Netuyo. It's not so clear. What is that an answer for? Vayotzienu, right? But take a look at the next point. The ilu loy hoitia kodosh boruch wisavoyseno mitraim, hare onu uvoneinu uvenevoneinu meshubodim hoyinu lefar v'mitraim. This is a very strong statement. If Hashem would have taken us out from Mitzrayim, we would have always remained there. Up to this day. What does it mean? Physically, we would have been in Egypt. I mean, how can anybody say that history wouldn't have changed? Right?
Rav Mevesky did say precisely that in the Shir on the Parsha once, that this was the archetypal overthrow of the world power, which none would ever have happened.
You're right. There are some misfortunes who actually say that. That from here it's a proof, right? That things would have remained forever, right? The fact that a superpower can lose out is shelo kederach hateva. Right? Shelo kederach hateva. Can you imagine all of a sudden Russia disappearing? I mean, they are so strong. Anybody who is even a possible danger, right? They would destroy. I mean, how can it come to be destroyed? So how did that Roman Empire disappear? How did the Persian Empire disappear? It happened. But it's unnatural. It's not a natural thing. Right? When you think back, you'll see an enormous amount of coincidences, that one thing led to another. It's a hashgofet. But naturally, it shouldn't have happened. Why did Hashem allow it to become part of nature, that even the greatest of superpowers will change and they will lose out, to allow the movement of history, right? When did it start? By Paro. Paro is the first superpower, according to this commentary, right? If Paro, right, would have continued in his strength, he would have still be Paro today. Who would have overthrown him? Anybody who stands up against him, he would just destroy. He was too powerful. Hashem allowed that history should be much more fluid, much more flexible, for the sake of the Jews. That was established in Yitzhak Mitzrayim. It's a big chidush, right? You mentioned it, so I say it's a tremendous chidush that the history would have been different. The whole nature of history could have been like a boring, long-term one empire forever and ever and ever. There wouldn't be such a tremendous movement in history unless if it wouldn't have been for Yitzhak Mitzrayim. But the Maharal doesn't learn this way. The Maharal learns, Harei onu voninu vnei voninu mishubodim oinu v'parah b'mitzrayim, doesn't mean that we would still be in Egypt. It means that that character that we had as slaves would still be part of us. Meaning, our nature wouldn't have changed. Right? The fact that our nature changed, that in itself is a result of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. That is part of what the Maharal keeps repeating, that Yitzhak Mitzrayim wasn't just a physical going out, a physical exodus. It was an inner exodus. Something changed within us. You know, Mitzrayim went out from within us. What? And it was actually an enormous, drastic change in our personality. We became free forever. This is what it means. If Hashem would have taken us out, then would have still be there. What does it mean? Because, says the Maharal, everything that Hashem does has to be eternal by its very nature. This is the difference between Hashem doing something and a human being doing something. What do we mean when we say God will build the third Beis Hamikdash? I'm not talking about those who learn it literally, that God will build the third Beis Hamikdash. But there are many Mefarshim who don't take it literally, right? Including the Rambam. The proof is that the Rambam tells us how to build the Beis Hamikdash. That means that we will have to do it. So what does the statement mean? God will build the Beis Hamikdash. It means that the building of the third Beis Hamikdash will have a God-like quality. What will it be? Eternity. Everything Hashem does directly is eternal. Right? I mean, even though it will be our hands that build it, it will be God's binyan, because it will be eternal. Hashem's actions are eternal. That's what the Maharal says. Why it's so important Hashem took us out from Egypt and not a shaliach. No messenger, no agent. Hashem. Why? Because anything which is through a shaliach, anything which is through nature, is a temporary situation. What Hashem does is eternal. Hashem changed our very nature. We human beings became free. Okay? Comes out then that Pesach. Okay? Pesach, which means the divine intervention, that's what Pesach represents, right? Caused our change. We became different people. Yes? So, if so, according to the Maharal, this statement, if Hashem wouldn't have taken us out, if it would be through an agent, right, we would still be slaves. And like this, we are free forever. This is an answer to what? To Pesach. So we have the answer for Moror, and there we have the answer for Pesach, right? So obviously, Bayotzienu is what? And this is an answer for Matzah. Okay? Now, according to this, we can figure it out why the Chachomim decided on leaning as a substitute for Korban Pesach. What are we saying now, the essential meaning of the Korban Pesach, the real meaning of the Korban Pesach according to Maral, how it affected us, the fact that we are forever free. What can we do in a physical form, something that represents an inner freedom, something that's within us that's free forever? How do we express it? So the Chachomim of that generation found that there is one action that people who feel completely calm without any worries what they do. You know what they do? When they eat, they lean. That, for the Chachomim of that generation, was so expressive of the idea of that inner calmness of a free person that was the best substitute for Korban Pesach. Because the way we are saying now, the essence of Korban Pesach is not the going out. That's represented by Matzah. The essence of the Korban Pesach is how it affected us so deeply that we changed our personality. So Mesubim is the right substitute for Korban Pesach. Do you follow me? Okay, in other words, the essence of the Korban Pesach is divine intervention. But what kind of divine intervention? Divine intervention that changed our nature. Not a divine intervention that took us out. That's already the Matzah. Okay? That is the changing of the nature of a person. That is the Korban Pesach. All right? Now,
Rabbi,
yeah.
According to your definition, would the Jews be the only free people?
The freest of all people. Not the only people, but the freest of all people are the Jews. And the Chachamim say that. The Chachamim learn it out from Apostles. Chorus al haluchoi, right? That the words in the tablets were inscribed in the tablet, right? Al tikre chorus elocherus. You know, who reached the highest level of freedom? The Jews. Okay. And I have to tell you the pirush on that. There's a tremendous depth to this idea. Why is that more freedom? Right. There's a big problem how to define freedom. Let's say, for instance, if the doctor tells me, take this medicine, right? Would you say that there is more freedom in my yes taking the medicine or in my not taking the medicine? I don't feel like taking the medicine, but the doctor told me yes to take the medicine. Is there any way that we can compare what is more freedom? Right? So a certain person can say, well, I do what I feel like doing. I'm not going to listen to the doctor. It's an act of freedom. If I listen to the doctor, then I'm listening to someone else who is outside of me. So why is that more freedom than this? So the explanation would be like this. Well, because when I do what I want to do, it comes from within me. If I listen to the doctor, I'm listening to somebody outside, which means the deeper the desire comes from, right, that is more freedom. Okay, now, I want to steal. I want to become rich. I want to hold up a bank. It's a desire within me. And I'll say, no, it's wrong. I won't do it. Where is there more freedom? In deciding I won't do it or deciding that I will do it? That is a matter of definition. What comes from the deepest part of you. What is your essence? Is your essence good or your essence is bad? Now, if your essence is your physical desires, then of course the freest act of it all would be steal. Hold up a bag. What about if you believe that your real essence is spiritual? So therefore, that decision of not to steal comes from a much deeper level of yourself, and the wanting to steal is a more external part. If so, of course you are freer when you decide not to steal. Here, it's just a matter of definition. What about if the Torah tells you that the freest person is the person who follows the Torah? What is the Torah really telling you? That the deepest level of the Jew, right, is the neshama, the one that naturally does Torah. So therefore, if you do Torah, you are really doing what's the deepest level of yourself. Just the opposite. If you don't do Torah, if you don't keep the Torah, because you say, I don't feel like keeping the Torah, who are you listening to? A more external part of yourself. Then you are being a slave. Now, what the Torah is telling you, by telling you that real freedom is listening to the Torah, is the Torah is establishing what is your essence. Your essence is that part of you who wants to listen to the Torah. If you listen to anybody else, you are listening to the outside. But then you're a slave. Okay? Now, when was this established? Bitzias Mitzrayim. In Bitzias Mitzrayim, we became Avdei Hashem. In other words, the nature of the Jew, according to the Maharal, became a listener to God. Of course you can listen to others. You can listen to your Yetzer Hara. You can listen to your animalistic instincts. But if so, you are going to become a slave. Real freedom is only listening to God. That was established in Bitzias Mitzrayim. Okay, let's step again.
You gave, you broke up the Yavarim Hayinu into answering the different parts. How did you break it up into answering the different questions? Yavarim Hayinu?
Yeah. Avodim Hayinu, that's Morar. Avodim Hayinu, that's Morar. Oh, that's the... It's according to many Mepharshim, Avodim Mekalim Mitzrayim, that's Morar.
Right, and the Leinu, so you've answered, so you, according to this thing, according to this, you didn't answer the dipping then. In this
right.
Because last year,
right.
I'm just trying to.
Right.
Last year, you gave a shot at Avarim Hayinu was the matzah and the
right, right, right,
and then
right.
The Ilu Hotsu was
right.
The dipping.
I'm using the Maharal of Shad, the Ilu Lo Yotzi is according to
this. So Avarim Hayinu, okay. I just wanted to. I want to get my notes straight.
Right.
So get you
right.
Which Shad was that? Do you remember?
I can't remember. I can't remember, but it's a very common shot. The Avodim Hayinu is the power of the Mitzrayim is the Korban Pesach, but it's not the Maharal.
Mm-hmm.